All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, September 1st. No more August, only into September. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Finally done chewing his apple. And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com for short. Still time to grab that free 7-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That'll give you optimal lineups, FanDuel and DraftKings. NFL, MLB, everything you need. NBA, when the time comes around, we store it all under one subscription package. Don't section it off by sport, by provider, like other some other places do. It's all there. We have it. You have it. It's all part of our package. So free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, we're all good to go. A little bit of a weird Friday in baseball, buddy. Do you like it when you see early games on a Friday? Kind of throws me off a little bit. How about you?
Yeah, throws me off a little bit. I think it's the holiday weekend. That's my only guess, but... Yeah,
nah, it's a double header for the. There's a double header, and then the stupid Cubs always play early games because I don't know, they've never figured out that they actually put lights in the stadium like 25 years ago, and they still just insist on playing day games. I don't know why.
It's a holiday weekend, dude.
Yeah, good call. My bad. That's a great. You're definitely right. It's a holiday weekend. A couple pieces of actually news to cover here. One is probably is DFS relevant for today. Justin Upton got traded to the Angels for Cameron Maybin yesterday, Verlander got traded also to the Astros, but that's a little less relevant for today. But Upton to the Angels, how do you think, I mean, upgrade for them there? He's going to probably hit third after Trout. He'd been putting together a pretty good season. Do you see this as a good trade for the Angels? Like, are they finally, I mean, they had the worst player in baseball hitting behind Trout up until this point in Pujols, so... Do you see this as like an upgrade for the Angels? Do you like the move? I know we don't usually talk about like team movement too much, but this one struck me as interesting.
Yeah, I think it's relevant for our purposes only because, well, so like in real baseball, the teams have to care about things like how good of a fielder you are. For our purposes, we're blessed to not worry about that whatsoever. And so, you know, Maybin can play center field. Upton cannot. The Angels have someone who can play center field in Trout. They have other options as well. And Maven's a worse hitter than Upton. So, you know, I think it probably makes the Angels lineup a little stronger. I mean, Upton obviously is like not exactly a superstar by any means, but Pujols, as we've talked about, has been one of the very worst players in all of Major League Baseball. And yeah, I mean, Upton ticking up near that 900 OPS, I think it's going to definitely solidify the middle of that lineup.
Yeah, no, and it's probably offensive wise, probably one move to the other for Upton. I don't know if it makes a huge difference for his overall season projection. If it does move Andrelton Simmons into the leadoff spot, that's a pretty interesting move. He's been actually pretty good this year, all things considered. Guy primarily known for a glove. If everyone wants to talk about someone who's juicing, I'm going to put Andrelton Simmons on the list.
Doug Norrie does not represent the DFSR company as a whole in his list creation, and in no way should that be constructed as any sort of, you know, legal observation or anything like that.
He's on pace for his most home runs. Yeah, 14 home runs this year. So I know people want to throw that out there when these home runs jump. When you see Andrelton Simmons hitting 14 home runs in a season, I don't know. Raise some eyebrows. All right, let's get
home runs in a season. Poor guy. Can't hit. Just go out there and finally scrape 14 wall scrapers. And not to mention, he had 17 home runs in 2013.
Well, he had, but he had 15 in the previous 1,500 plate appearances before the season. So
just under the cloud of suspicion from old Uncle Doug, just doesn't can't trust a guy. Anderson's poor guy. Just listen out there. He's trying to think about putting his DFS lineups together. He always likes to do it a little early.
He's just on one of those like super slow. It's like one of those super slow steroid cycles, like the 3-year cycle. You know, like he just like I cycle up once every 3 years just to keep people off
for contract here.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing to note about Upton, you know, I was talking about him not being any great shakes, but then citing a 900 OPS. I just want to point out that most of the improvement we've seen out of Upton this year has been BABIP driven.
Yep.
His underlying peripherals are almost identical to last year. 28% K rate, just way too high to sustain a .280 batting average. And the 11% walk rate is a little bit up, but it's roughly in line with his career norm. So Upton, pretty much the same guy. He has a 50-point increase in BABIP over his last 2 years. So I think that it's going to be difficult for him to sustain that level of production, I guess I'll say. So I wouldn't count on him just walking right into Anaheim and being an 900 OPS guy.
No, but they are able to slide Albert Pujols' 650 OPS down one more slot in the order.
Do you think they're going to, though? Do you think that... Or is he like contractually obligated to continue to bat third, no matter how low his on base?
It sure seems like that's the case, right? Like
to an outside observer, that's certainly how it appears to me.
Like why? Like what other reason could you have, or just continue? It must be his contract. Like you just don't. It's like the optics on his contract, I guess. Like just that you can't put him any lower because this guy's stone cold worst. Anyway, all right, let's get into a pretty full evening of baseball. We can probably skip over these two early games, I think, just two of them. I'm not sure how many people on this holiday weekend are going to be playing those, the 1 o'clock and the 2 o'clock games on FanDuel and DraftKings. So we'll get into the evening slate. The pitching here is weird. Kershaw is back tonight, which at first you get excited. You're like, Kershaw against San Diego, and then you hear that he's going to be on, I close the quote, Dave Roberts had some quote that was like a loose 75 pitch count. So whatever loose 75 pitch count means, I think we can just call it 75 and just say that it's going to be about what it is. This is the best matchup you can have as a pitcher, and Kershaw is basically the best in baseball when he's healthy. Do you think that it's just that pitch count thing just kind of takes him out of the running? He's 12,000 on FanDuel, 13,000 on DraftKings, 13.5 on DraftKings. Do you think the threat of him being removed at that 75 to 80 pitch count limit just makes him kind of unplayable at these prices?
I think so. I mean, and especially considering it's the Dodgers, I would guess that that is like the absolute high end. Like, they're not going to be like, oh, you know, well, he's looking pretty good. It's only like 60 pitches through five, so he winds up going later. I think that's probably a hard count, and I wouldn't probably go anywhere near him. It wouldn't shock me if he just goes out there and just destroys the Padres, by the way. So let's get that off the table right away. But this is the highest pitcher price we've seen on FanDuel in a while. And Kershaw's also coming back from injury. Like, he could not be quite as good as he's been in the past, at least at first, while he shakes the rust off. So perhaps blasphemous, but no, I'm not seriously considering Kershaw at these prices.
Yeah, I set him, which is crazy because I wouldn't do this for any other pitcher basically, but I set him at six innings pitched around there for 75 pitches, which again is not something I would do for any other pitcher in baseball, and he's still the highest raw point guy in the system, which tells you a little bit more about this day's slate than it probably does about like him. But even with those raw points, I just don't think if the threat of him being pulled at the fifth, like especially on FanDuel, like if you're not gonna hit the six and get that quality start, like all these little things do kind of start trickling in your overall point projection, and it is too risky. And again, it's just a shame because the San Diego Padres are just the exact guy that you want to just pay top dollar for a pitcher like a Kershaw to go against, and we just probably can't do it. If we can't play him because of how long he's likely to last in the game or not likely to last in the game, where do we pivot to? These other pitching options do not, there's no one really completely jumping off the page of me here.
Now things are looking pretty grim from my perspective as well. There's just a lot of guys with warts, so we might as well run through them because somebody's going to have to show up in these optimal lineups. I would say if you're looking for safety or the highest perception of safety anyway, I would guess that a lot of people are going to turn to Gerrit Cole here. Cole obviously has some name to him. You know, he wasn't very good last season, but this season he's back up to an 8.3 Ks per nine and a 2.16 walks per nine. The home run to fly ball ratio has plagued him this season, but that looks to me more like noise than anything else. His historical levels at home runs to fly ball ratio have been more around 10%, and actually quite low until this season, and it's not like he's giving up that much more hard contact, so I suspect we'll see him turn back into a pitcher at some point who actually depresses the home run quite a bit as opposed to one who gives it up. And moving Cincinnati out of Great American into Pittsburgh is a step in the right direction for the pitcher's purposes as well, so I think taking all those factors together, again, not in love with it. It's not one of those slates where I'm like fist pumping and tripling my buy-in or whatever, but yeah, it's a pretty low overall total on the game, and I can see him performing here.
Yeah, the Reds had the lowest implied total according to our system going into the game, somewhere in the 3.5 run range. The Cole's biggest issue, I mean, for FanDuel, I think the price is in play, 9,100. It's not like you're breaking the bank there. You'll be able to play just about any batter you want to once kind of the lineups come in. So 9,100 on FanDuel, that's really just not price prohibitive,
yeah,
cost prohibitive at all. On DraftKings, it's a little different. He's 11,000. I get worried about paying this much for a guy who doesn't strike that many guys out. Like, if you're getting into this 11,000, mid-11s, close to 12 range, you just have to have, to me, I mean, this is a rough estimate, so this can always change depending on matchup and whatever else, but, and just the rest of the player pool. I would think a sort of a close baseline for this is that you need to be striking out at least a batter an inning, and Cole does not get there. And it's not like Cincinnati K's a ton either. So it would make me worried to pay his price on DraftKings.
Well, Cincinnati's good against right-handed pitching. I mean, they've been a top-five right team consistently all year long in terms of hitting righties. So this is not a good matchup by any stretch. And even on the road this season, the Reds have the sixth highest WOBA. So they're a good hitting team. This doesn't feel good. It's just that, as you'll see as we go through some of these other names, there's just kind of no other options.
Well, I don't know. I could be talked into Jimmy Nelson here, I think. It's not a fantastic matchup against the Nationals, right? But the Bryce Harper-less Nationals are a slightly different team, though they still have a pretty good middle of the order. Nelson is the kind of guy, so I think we talked about him last time he pitched, about just the change that he's seen this season over just his whole entire career, right? So he has spent his career hovering around 8 Ks per 9, although the last couple seasons have been even less. Like, he was, some of his 8 Ks per 9 comes from some stuff earlier in his career. Actually, no, it's actually just being boosted. Never mind, I take that back. It's being boosted all from this year, right? So up until the season, he was basically a 7.5 K per 9 guy, and now he's close to a 10 K per 9 guy. And we talked about this last time. When we see changes like this, if we think that they're sustainable, with Nelson, I seem to think they are. His money line and implied runs are close to Cole. Cole's a little bit better in the, at least the implied run category. Do you think you can talk yourself into Nelson here in a not a great matchup against Washington?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, so there's a lot of moving parts here. There's both the change of Nelson and kind of his pitcher profile, and then there's also Washington and kind of how they've changed and adjusted as the season's gone along. Washington was lousy in August against right-handed pitching, just in, against pitching in general. They went from a team that was consistently in the top two or three all season. They now have a season-long total of the fifth best WOBA against righties, but if you look at just August in a vacuum, they were one of the bottom seven or eight teams, and that's a pretty big shift. And I think, you know, they've had a lot of little injuries that have come and gone, Bryce Harper being the most notable one, but Trey Turner, you know, Goodwin. There's been other guys that have been in and out of the lineup or banged up. And I think taken as a whole now, they're simply worse than they were earlier in the season. I think that's sort of irrefutable. I do think Nelson remains an interesting case because every time I want to look at him and say it's going to come crashing back down to earth, you know, he's had better than a K per nine or better than a K per inning in, let's see here, every single start since June 13th. So that's a pretty darn long track record of having more than, or at least one strikeout for every inning pitched. And that sounds like the kind of guy who's really doing it. So yeah, if he's really that strikeout per inning guy and we don't really like Cole's matchup, maybe Nelson does become the play.
And I haven't really seen, I mean, tons that he's shifted around. He throws the fastball a little bit more this year, 2% more over the course of the season, which, I mean, I guess that represents a shift. He's gotten away from his sinker, I guess, and moved it more towards some of the other offerings like the slider and the changeup. Nothing like overly dramatic. That would usually, with this kind of case difference, you see something kind of overly dramatic, like I'm throwing a totally new pitch, or I'm just like, I've completely abandoned this one thing that wasn't working for me. His pitch FX stuff nothing jumps out to me as that being the case, except that he's just throwing, yeah, basically just the sinker a little bit less and the other offerings just a little bit more, but though none more than a lot of the other stuff. I guess the curveball a little bit. But yeah, I think it seems sustainable to me. I think I would prefer him, at least for the price point, I definitely prefer him over Cole. He's only $8,400 on DraftKings, so almost $3,000 less than Cole there. That is a savings I'll happily take for a guy who just seems like he's going to strike more guys out. I think the same thing, the pricing is a little closer on FanDuel. He's $8,500. I mean, do you think that's a reasonable shift down? I mean, I know you threw Cole out there first, though you were sort of lukewarm on him to begin with. Do you think that's like a reasonable sort of pivot off of Cole, mostly just because of the strikeout stuff?
Yeah, I think you're probably onto something there. I mean, and I hadn't looked quite as closely enough just because, you know, it's early in the day here, but I hadn't looked quite as closely as I could have at Washington's situation too. You know, we've kind of been kicking them around as a team that's not been quite as good as they had been in the past, but never really looked into it seriously just because there weren't really pitchers we were going to consider pitching against them. But given that Nelson is right there neck and neck, I think it was worthwhile to go back and kind of reevaluate the sample size there. And yeah, given that Washington's been so bad recently, Nelson probably is the guy.
There are a couple other guys on this slate that do have strikeout stuff, though I'm not enamored with their matchups. One's Luis Castillo. He's, you know, kind of, this is his first season, so he's a rookie. He's been really good, I would say, more than 9.5 Ks per 9 this season. The walks are a little bit problematic, up over 3.5, but the xFIP is reasonable, 3.65. Not a fantastic matchup against Pittsburgh. Do you see him? I mean, is he cash game viable? The money line is not completely going in the wrong direction for him. He is definitely an underdog. Castillo, is he a guy that you can consider moving out of Great American?
Yeah, I think so. So the Pirates, they're kind of a weird matchup in some ways because, yeah, they have a low strikeout rate. The 18.8% is definitely not where you want to be. That's a bottom three total in the majors this season. And, you know, really limits Castillo's upside because normally I'd be looking at him as sort of a big tournament play here. But the Pirates also have a bottom three WOBA against righties, so in the National League, bottom four overall. And that's just pretty solid. Like, I think if you're trying to dream up a pretty good floor on Castillo, like maybe you're considering him for the pitcher two slot on DraftKings, or, you know, you're just trying to think about if he would be a good cash game pivot because you don't believe in Nelson and you're not sure about Cole's matchup, I think that he's a totally reasonable play. You don't love the money line here. It's always tough to take someone who's an underdog in a cash game, but I think Castillo is probably a little bit, I think he's more legit than he might seem at first blush. The thing I really like about Castillo as well is the innings pitched. He has been right around 6 innings pitched per start this season, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it's actually, you know, better than you might realize when you try to look more carefully at some of the other pitchers who you trust a little bit more. So yeah, I think Castillo's relatively safe here. I do have concerns about the upside just based on Pittsburgh's low K rate.
You know, you make a good point about the six innings per start. That's excellent, really. I mean, especially a guy in this price range. Yeah. Like, you see, for his K stuff and this price range, that kind of longevity is the wrong word. The ability to stick in a game really does mean a lot. It's actually kind of amazing considering what his walk rate is that he is averaging this high, because usually guys with 3.5+ walk per nine kind of, well, stuff in quotes in that case, but there's just not a lot of chances for them to last in games simply because they run their pitch counts too high. So the fact that he's being able to stick around that long, I mean, BABIP's been a little bit lucky, 251. That's probably been a lot of the reason that some of that stuff, he's been able to get out of innings by just having some of those balls not turn into hits. So there's probably a little bit of regression coming there, at least from his innings pitched. But I'm mostly targeting, on pitching days like this, I'm targeting, especially when like there's not a lot of crazy out of control money lines. Like yesterday you had Hendricks, who's not a great pitcher, but he had a crazy high money line, and that was like kind of enough to just get to make him the excuse to be the pitcher, because you could count on, or not count on, but you could factor in some of those win points. When that's not the case for a lot of pitchers today, I am mostly then at this point just looking for strikeouts, and Castillo is another guy that represent. Who else have I missed? I said there was another guy, and I'm blanking on who it was. Did I miss somebody?
Well, I mean, someone's coming up on DraftKings kind of like in and around some of the top lineups is Dinelson Lamet. Lamet's kind of a weird one. Just because he's got a huge K rate this season, like basically effectively 11 Ks per nine. He's almost looking like a right-handed Robbie Ray in some ways. But the track record isn't quite as sustained, and pitchers like that are just really unusual. So it's tough to say whether this is who he'll be for the whole season or not. And of course, the rub here is that not only is he up against Kershaw, but he's up against the Dodgers too. So, you know, the Dodgers have been a top five team against right-handed pitching all season long. They do tend to strike out, which, you know, I really appreciate for his big tournament chances here. But yeah, Lamet still somewhat of an unknown quantity. And while I wouldn't be averse to playing a pitcher like him on, say, DraftKings, where you just kind of have to make the money work on a slate without much pitching, it wouldn't be at the top of my list, you know. So yeah, good park, bad matchup, really bad opposing pitcher that he's going up against. But, you know, there's a scenario where he goes six innings and gets 8 Ks or something, and that probably pays the price on its face.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of where I fall with him too. Is like, the matchup stinks obviously against the Dodgers, but you're not going to find this kind of K rate on anybody else, like in the 7,500 ish range on FanDuel. Same price on DraftKings, 7,600. Like, you don't find this kind of K stuff. And I'm actually, it's going to be really weird to think about running him. Like, right now, he's coming in 100% of lineups on our site, which is crazy considering that he's a pretty massive underdog, but it's all coming from the strikeout rate. And the Dodgers, again, not a good matchup, but they have a pretty low implied total for them. So their implied total today, yeah, it's less than 4.5, which for them is a really pretty low total. And for him, 4.5 runs is like kind of not the end of the world when you're priced in this range with this kind of K stuff. So it's not going to feel great. None of the pitching really feels all that great in general. There are a couple of their name guys on the list here. I don't know if any of these guys interest you. Sonny Gray against the Giants. Sonny Gray against the Red Sox. Any interest?
If Sonny Gray can pitch against the Giants, I'd be more interested.
No kidding. Giants.
Probably not against the Red Sox. Bad park, bad matchup. The price isn't exactly attractive. I'm just not interested.
Cueto back from the DL today against St. Louis. We can probably knock that off just in terms of just guys coming back off of injury, so don't need to worry there. Really, the rest of these guys, pretty uninspiring list. Mike Leake gets traded to Seattle. Do you see the move into the American League as just another kind of move down for him? I mean, he's been all right, I guess. But, I mean, do you see any interest there against Oakland team?
No. Any other questions?
I'm just kind of going through the list here. There's just not guys I sort of recognize. I could do one other guy that possibly is worth considering here just because the opposing team is so bad. Blake Snell. around this time of year, we usually get kind of start getting locked into, not like you can start a guy against any team, but you can start any guy against specific teams. Padres fit this mold. White Sox starting to fall into this mold. The Giants starting to fall into this mold too. When we're just, the teams are just pretty bad all around. They've been bad all season. Where we can start maybe considering even like, you know, below average pitchers against them. Does Snell fit that for you? Just mostly because, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I'm mostly looking who's pitching against the Padres, who's pitching against the White Sox, and then I've kind of started to throw the Giants into that crew too.
Do you ever try to dream bigger? Like when you first wake up in the morning, like maybe think about heading down to the beach with your daughter. You guys live in just a beautiful location.
I don't need to dream about that. I can just do that. So then these are the other things I dream about are the things
who's
that
up
are
against the White Sox, who's up against the Padres.
You tend to dream about things that are slightly less tangible.
Don't open that door. Yeah. I'm in here by myself. the answer is, I mean, Snell's probably is somewhat of an interesting upside play. Like he's had electric K stuff in the minors. He even had big time K numbers last season. It's kind of drifted down this year and the walks are a huge concern. But whenever that's the case, like, you know, these guys with incredible walk rates, sometimes they just don't get walks, right? Like he had a start against Miami where he had 9 Ks in 5 innings. Like, I don't know. Stranger things have happened, and given that there's so few great options, it wouldn't shock me if Snell was the best points per dollar play on the slate. You'd never want to touch him, have him anywhere near your cash games, almost regardless of the matchup, probably. But yeah, the upside's there.
Yeah, walk rate, like I said, through the roof. He's just this, it's a control issue for him. The guy just can't find.
He's not a very good pitcher, you know.
Nah, it's Chris Game too, because he kind of came up through the minors like he was going to be one, man. This guy has crazy K stuff through the minors, like 11 Ks per nine plus, basically for, I don't know, 3 straight years. And then he just gets to the majors. Just, I don't know if people are just able to lay off the pitches or what it is, but he just cannot, he has not been able to replicate it through 170 innings up until this point, not to say it's never going to happen. All right, we're going to get into some stacks here for some of our offensive needs. Hit us up with a sponsor first.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'd love to talk to you about fantasyfactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great site for people who like to play DFS, the traditional salary cap format, but without going up against, you know, the huge sharks with 150 buy-ins to every single double up and so on. Really good for players who want to play between $5 and $50, say, per night. Right now, they've got some really cool things coming up for the NFL season. The first is a free entry NFL Survivor contest. It has a $1,000 winner-take-all prize, which is actually really, really cool. That's a great offer, you know, totally winnable, awesome to follow. You know, Survivor just tends to be a really fun way to do fantasy football in general as well. And they'll also have a $100 week one free roll, so you can just head over there. Great way to get started, you know, building a bankroll is to enter these free rolls. I know we've run a few for DFSR users in the past, and I think they're open to that again this year. But yeah, head on over to fantasyfactor.com, tell them we sent you, and enjoy the free rolls.
Well, one thing that's going to be good about not having to pay up for pitching today is that we have a game in Coors. And I know this has been one of those things that it's just people in chat were complaining about this the other day. And this has been sort of a DFS complaint over the years. And I get it, is that Coors, quote, messes up slates. I think I understand what they mean by messes up slates because the run lines are so much higher. And most people, at this point are building projection systems with at least Vegas factored in somewhat. You know, the degree which you factor it in is up to you, sort of, or what you think is best. But it's something you have to account for in some way, shape, or form. And the run lines in Colorado are just so much higher than like any other place, and it's really not particularly close. Now they have price corrected for some of it. Today it might not matter that much because if we're not going to pay for pitching, is this just the place we're going to go? Diamondbacks right around 6.1 runs. I don't know, the Rockies, I'm just looking here, right, a little less than six, right around six runs. Do we just want to just get as much of this game as possible and then we're fine kind of not paying for pitching?
Yeah, I think so. I think your point, I understand the industry fatigue around basically having to look at one game, and the sites have tried to correct for this a little bit, but it's still a reality. And when you got poor pitchers going there, especially if you have, you know, no obvious really expensive pitchers, it's just got to be on your radar. So yeah, I think tonight is a classic night where the Coors bats will be highly owned just because of the lack of top end pitching talent. I don't really think there's too much way around it.
Yeah. You're going to get guys like Iannetta. Well, they have been the Diamondbacks have kind of messed around with their lineups over the course of the season, and it's been frustrating.
Yeah.
They've settled into what I think they plan to do here when they face lefties, which is to hit Peralta first. That makes That couldn't make any less sense. But they can insist on doing it.
Just trust it, dude. Trust it. Keep going.
Well, they're just like, we're like one guy who's complete garbage against lefties, and then four guys in a row who are really good against lefties. But anyway, they're going to probably hit Iannetta second, Pollock third. I think you can basically just consider the entire middle of that order: Iannetta, Pollock, Goldschmidt, and JD. Just against a guy like Freeland, especially if they're going to have the highest implied run line on the slate, and I believe they're going to. I can see at least Iannetta and Goldschmidt as being pretty chalky, and I'm mostly just factoring in that you're not paying for pitching, right? So, although FanDuel 5,400 for Goldschmidt is asking a lot. So I do think you see these guys as pretty chalky. I think that the run lines have just tended to be a little too high on the Rockies, at least of late. But again, they're all up there with six implied runs. It's really kind of hard to get away from it. And I think that you probably see this as the majority ownership throughout the industry, as long as you think you can afford it. After that game, again, I think, which is, that game is so far above the rest of the group, I think, that I think what we're talking about here is like tournament pivots, or we're just like looking for some price savings, because I don't want to say like that's one and then, you know, here's two, because this is actually probably like, these are like one, two, three, and four, and then now we're talking about the fifth team that's in the best spot, but other teams that you see in good spots today.
Yeah, I think another team that's, you know, fairly expensive but that you can target here are the Yankees. The Yankees are up there in terms of Vegas implied totals, and they're up against Doug Fister, who's just kind of like a really great conventional stacking against sort of target. Fister, the Ks are oddly up for him. Like, I don't really have any great reason why his Ks are at an all-time high right now. Perhaps you've looked into that more closely than I have. But the walks are also at an all-time high, like really, really high. You know, Fister's kind of gotten by historically on luck. For lack of a better term, he's just kind of the lottery winner when it comes to, you know, career BABIP, career home runs allowed, and so on. When it comes to the rest of what he's put together, like, he's always run better than his xFIP. This season, it's kind of coming to bear for him, though. The 4+ walk rate is just totally terrible. The 7.6 Ks per nine is reasonable, but nothing to be afraid of for a Yankees team that can really mash. So I really like, you know, if you just want to go peek towards the top of that lineup, you're going to see some familiar names there. But you can take Brett Gardner as a left-handed bat at the top of that lineup, maybe even Aaron Hicks, maybe Didi Gregorius. You know, if we're talking big stacks here, I think Sanchez is reasonable play in a righty-righty matchup, still probably remains underpriced relative to his upside. So yeah, just anyone around there. I think that they have probably similar upside to any of these teams, but might have just a little bit lower ownership because it's not really like the big power names that other people are going
to
be targeting.
No, I totally agree. And like I said, it's not like you're going to be able to roll just double stacks all the way through for Colorado and Arizona, because the pricing is prohibitive. Yeah. Even on FanDuel, when you're not paying, you're going to be able to get a couple of those guys, but you're not going to be able to populate your entire lineup with them. So I probably overstated that part. I didn't overstate the amount of runs that are projected to be scored there, but I probably did overstate the ability to get all those guys in there. Yankees definitely fall into that category slightly below them, but they're much cheaper, right? So you're price corrected down. They have moved Aaron Judge down in the lineup. He'd been struggling since the All-Star break, and they saw fit to sit him for a couple games and then move him down to like the sixth or seventh spot in the lineup. I'm not sure things like that totally make sense.
It's really something, right? Like, it's almost like, what's a guy got to do almost, right? Like, he's still one of the major league leaders in WAR, but because of a clustering effect on when he's gotten his hits, now he bats six. It makes no sense.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't understand moves like that. He's the same guy. Like, his numbers, he's the same guy that he was before the All-Star break in terms of the Ks and the walks and everything. The things that are just different is not all of his fly balls are turning into home runs like they were before. So that's kind of the difference. And the BABIP has dropped. Now, the Ks are a real thing. Like, he is striking out a lot. But, right, just kind of calling the ball and moving him below guys like Didi and Starlin Castro, it's just like a panic move that I just don't understand. Like, I just don't understand why teams do that. Like, either he's good or he's not. And, like, a guy like Judge, you're not just, like, you can't be bad and just have that kind of OPS for that many games. Like, you can be hot for, like, a little bit and you can have a nice little run, but you just can't be that good for that many games without being a real just elite talent. And just to move him down in the lineup because like you said, a clustering effect makes no sense. I like the Brewers here. They're coming cheap. Mostly I just like the cheap factor on them in a good park, so they're pushing up around five implied runs, and they're all coming pretty cheap across the board. Like, Thames is still only 3,000. He should be hitting leadoff. Walker, 2,900. Braun, middle of the lineup, although he's much better against lefties, but I'm still probably willing to do it. The top of that lineup, all coming around 3,000 or less against a guy like Tanner Roark. Roark is not a bad pitcher by any means, but he is just not a big strikeout guy. He's just like kind of a meh pitcher. He's just like a guy who's just going to be around the majors for a while because he's just good enough to just go out and start every 5 days. He's never going to light the world on fire. It's not a great move for him to move to this ballpark, mostly just because of some of the home run effects. Like, he is more of a ground ball pitcher, but this park does boost power kind of all around. And I'm I like this team mostly for the price point aspect of, if I can get them around 3K at around five implied runs, then I'm fine doing it to kind of just round out my lineups, just because you can't completely overpay for cores and everywhere else. All right, you have one more team before we go, or are you good?
Yeah, no, I think there's a couple other teams I'm looking at here. So Nick Pivetta is kind of a weird guy this season. Like, he came up and was striking out a ton of guys early on, and that kind of made people afraid of him a little bit. And then he had some absolute epic blow up games where he given up eight, like there's a 4-game stretch here where he went giving up 8 runs, 5 runs, 3 runs, 6 runs. And two of those games, he didn't make it out of the second inning. So huge blow up potential from him. Sprinkled in there was an 11 strikeout game against San Diego too. So, you know, maybe for cash game purposes, it's a little bit troubling, but today he'll go up against Miami. Miami, kind of a weird team just because, well, they don't have a pitcher as far as I can tell so far. So, you know, some of the money lines and the totals are a little bit of a mess there. So, you know, maybe people aren't showing up in the system just yet. But I do think targeting, especially their power bats against Pivetta, is very interesting. Pivetta's really struggled with the home run ball. Obviously, the Marlins have guys like Stanton who can just launch the ball. Yelich is better against right-handed pitching. That's probably the sweet spot for in terms of big power upside. But even a guy like D. Gordon, you know, we haven't talked about about it this much this season, but steals present a sort of different upside where all the guy needs to do is just hit a single and all of a sudden he can just put up like a home run's worth of production. So kind of gives you that combination of ceiling and floor that I tend to like for cash game purposes. Like we could see just his last game, goes out there, walks, gets a steal, scores a run, and was most of the way home in terms of paying his price. So I think any of those three guys are pretty interesting. I think the Marlins represent more of an offbeat stack here. I don't think they're going to be necessarily hugely owned in cash games, but definitely a team to look at. If you think everyone else is going to be in Colorado, taking like especially those top three guys, I think could do something
for you. Dylan Peters is actually, Dan Straley was supposed to start for the Marlins. Dylan Peters is starting. I don't think he's available on FanDuel and DraftKings. It was a really late move last night after pricing and updating those APIs. So I don't know if he's actually available to play, but I'm a little confused by that line because Dylan Peters is not very good. The Phillies aren't very good either, right. But they do have some middle of the lineup guys that can hit lefties here. Peters is a lefty, so like Hoskins has been, I mean, almost historically good since he came up. Tommy Joseph in the middle of that lineup, Michael Franco, although he might be a reverse platoon split guy. I don't mind the middle of that lineup, though. The run line is pretty low. It's probably mostly just because either A, Vegas doesn't know what to make of it here, or B, the Phillies kind of stink, but it is going to be Peters that's going to play there. The last team I do want to throw out here is the Rays. The Rays have a big park upgrade moving from out of Tampa into Chicago here against Ronaldo Lopez. Ronaldo Lopez does have K stuff, something of K stuff, but man, the guy walks a lot of players. So 54 innings, he's about 5 walks per 9. So this would be more of a tournament stack for me. I don't like the stack guys. Don't like the stack teams a lot if I can avoid it against pitchers that do have strikeout stuff, because they can just turn that on for multiple innings and you can get a little unlucky, and then I don't know, then that stack doesn't look all that great. But the top of the Tampa Bay lineup, Kiermaier, Duda coming still in that mid 3000s range on FanDuel, Morrison mid 3000s. The top, really just three out of those four. I don't love Longoria here, although he's coming pretty cheap. They're projected for a lot of runs, mostly because Lopez does walk the ballpark, and they'll probably be in to that Chicago bullpen before too long. So don't mind going there on a little bit of the cheaper side. Interesting night all around. Also, one other note, the Mets-Houston game, for the people that didn't notice, was postponed because I guess they weren't able to reschedule where they're going to play the game, and they weren't able to get back into the Astrodome or wherever they play. They don't play in the Astrodome anymore. Wherever they play, Minute Maid Park in Houston. So just keep note of that, although you won't be able to play players from a postponed game anyway. All right, we're going to get out of here.
It's a great point. That's the hot fire you're looking for when you turn into the DFS podcast.
Well, I just more meant that it was postponed, not that you can actually populate your lineups. Although
you should not play the players from the postponed game. That's definitely, I mean, we should have led with that probably.
DFSR.com/NFL will get you a free 7-day trial to our projection system, free for 7 days and $29.95 a month after that. Go make sure to go over and rate and review us on iTunes, and also go take go look out for the DFSR NFL podcast. Already a bunch of listens on that, and we have another one going up today. Really excited about what we're going to get going here for our second season.
Yeah, that's a no halftime takeover podcast too, right? That's that's us talking a lot about no halftime, but also just getting into some big things to look out for early in the season. That was a really strong one.
I'm glad you thought that about yourself. You should rate and review yourself on iTunes and give yourself 5 stars. All
right, that was for both of us, dude. I'm just reflecting. I'm just an honest person. Sometimes our podcasts really suck bad. Generally speaking, they're absolute hot fire, and that one is no different.
This one's finishing week. All right, we're out of here. We'll see you guys again next week.